mobile. For PXB, main 4 VWA, is that you, Chris?
It's Lloyd, Lima, Lima, Oscar, Yankee, Delta.
Good morning, Lloyd. You sound a little bit like Chris. I was talking to a few minutes ago. And did you hear the repeater a few minutes ago?
I did. You mean all the scratching, horrible noises? I most certainly did.
It seems to have cleared up now. As a matter of fact, all that scratch, all that frying bacon, I couldn't even squelch it out at 9.
Just a very slight scratch and sizzle, but like I said, you're well, you know, understandable.
I went over to the White Oak repeater and also over to the Tryon repeater, and those didn't seem to be getting it near as bad.
Like the gentleman earlier mentioned, there was a lot of atmospheric interference that was going on, or just never can tell.
Just weren't holding their mouths right. So how are you doing this morning?
Like I said, had a very, you know, smooth ride into at least on Highway 14 to 85. Going good so far.
Hear that, because I'm over here on Highway 80, and I'm going to pop out on 14 and go straight down to Simpsonville this morning.
On the Highway 14, and I'm heading toward 85, we may pass by each other. Just like I said, look for a bluish-green truck with a bunch of pollen on it with the antenna sitting in the middle of the cab.
Tell you what, thanks to current conditions, I am fortunate to own a 2019 Ram 2500 diesel and also a 2009 Saturn Aura 4-cylinder. And I think you can guess which one I'm driving for mileage today. It's getting tough to drive that diesel at 540.
That it is. So you're definitely in the smaller car today.
You betcha. And I tell you, I'm getting a new appreciation for this little thing, even though, well, I'm 6'4". And I look like a Yeti getting in and out of it. But it's comfortable after I'm in it. I kind of put it on like a jacket. But it's a good little car.
Have the front seat removed and just drive from the back seat?
This way. Ain't nobody going to ride in the back seat with me in it. There's just nothing left.
It's definitely true. When I was growing up, I had a little TR7, which did not have a back seat, so there was no chance of that, but it was definitely a small car, but it definitely did well on gas mileage. And odd thing is, like I said, we have a Buick Enclave, and it gets the same gas mileage as my 2009 truck. Like I said, because my truck has that smart engine system where if it's not needed, when it's just running normal speed, it drops down to a 4-cylinder.
Management. Yeah, that's good stuff to have. That's real good. Well, so what kind of mileage are you getting out of that thing? That must be a Chevy.
The LTZ 71, it's not a four-wheel drive, so I'm getting about 16 to 17 miles per gallon. Good days, like I said, it'll get about 19, so that's definitely pretty good.
Well, I'm getting about 17 around town and about a little over 20 on the road with my diesel. That's a big old beast.
This, like I said, me and my wife are looking to unfortunately trade this truck in because, like I said, even though it's got the towing package on it, it doesn't really do too well, and we want to kind of go up in the mountains with it, and I don't want to stress this truck out being the 2009, where I don't think it's going to tow 6,800 pound camper dry, so that's, I probably added about 500-600 pounds worth of stuff in it. I just don't want to pull it up a major grade like that.
Point three. How many miles on it?
62,000.
Please don't do it. And what year is it? 2009? Okay. Those transmissions are usually good for about 175,000 miles. So if you're thinking about trading it, now's the time to do it before you have to do a training.
Definitely look into doing that and talk to my wife a little more about it.
W4VX, is that you, Chris?
I'm a little closer, here on 385 northbound, heading into Greenville.
That's Lloyd on here with us, and he and I were discussing some of the atmospheric conditions there for a little bit. Seems to have cleared up now. I tried squelching it out, and I got all the way up to 9 and still was getting interference pop in.
This would be a morning to be sitting in front of your 2-meter sideband rig and making contacts. Band's probably wide open. And I think, Steve, you said it was Lloyd. Go ahead and pick it up.
But the is it mainly what they're talking about, the atmospheric, because of the solar flares going on, or just other conditions?
Well, Lloyd, do we actually have some solar flares? I haven't been in a position where I could read about them lately. Do we have some solar flares going on?
Saw last week, either on the news or either on, for what it's worth, the internet news about the most activity on some solar flares.
Definitely explain it. All right. Yeah, that would explain it. Well, hey, it is what it is, and we just have to deal with it.
I think what's going on here today is more, what do they call that? You know, where an inversion where you get hot air over cold air, or cold air over hot air or something, and it creates pathways for radio, VHF radio waves to propagate much farther than line of sight. And so, like the mornings like this, and it happens in the spring and the fall. In mornings like this, you know, you probably talk up and down the East Coast on 2-meter sideband.
Man, I tell you what, I knew I shouldn't have eaten those Mexican beans.
Different kind.
That temperature inversion like that's the worst thing when you're ever trying to jump out of the airplanes with parachutes.
Hey, Lloyd, I got a hot flash for you, bud. If you ever really get to know me, you will find that Big Daddy don't get more than 10 feet off the ground, and I do not jump out of a perfectly good airplane, and I do not hang my butt off of 10 square yards of fabric vis-a-vis a hang glider or anything of that nature.
Nothing like that thrill of doing so, though. It's, you know, at some point in time, I recommend probably doing it just once in your life on a tandem, but it's definitely enjoyable for a one-time thing.
I would guesstimate that it's akin to putting a private aircraft into a dive, isn't it?
It's definitely true, but it's... If you can definitely recover the plane from a dive, parachuting's a lot safer than that, because a lot of times when the planes get going so fast like that, pretty much there's going to be no recovering once it gets in that, you know, where you're not going to be able to pull it up without tearing the wings and stuff or the plane apart.
That's, in my case, I always flew boonies. and a Mooney has a basically about a 9G solid tip-to-tip wing spar. So it's not like a Piper or some of those where you can tear the wing right out of the fuselage root. So consequently, you know, you just throw the landing gear down, put on the flaps, and you can drop some speed real fast, even in a dive.
This definitely sounds good. Are the is the FAA pretty much requiring at some point in time the planes to have those emergency chutes? Because I've seen where planes that have had disasters like that, they deploy those chutes and the plane comes down in a better condition than it just, you know, hitting the ground.
They're not a requirement at this point, to the best of my knowledge, but I lost my ticket about 8 years ago because I had a run of Meniere's disease, which is an inner ear issue, and if you can't maintain your balance, you don't get to fly, not legally anyhow. So I can fly right seat as long as I got a PIC, and I do that from time to time, but you know, I haven't kept up with the requirements and regulations, but as far as I know, no, they're called emergency deployment chutes. And no, they're not an absolute requirement, but I tell you what, I fly a radio control aircraft now, and at the airport, which is up on Jordan Road, north of 14, I see those guys have those emergency chutes on their ultralights all the time. Believe me, I wouldn't go up in one of those to begin with, but I definitely wouldn't go up with one of those emergency chutes on one of those.
A lot of them, especially with the experimental aircraft, you're right, I'm just like, no. Because as they say right now, those experimental aircrafts are not... they don't have to be regulated, or it's like, nah, I'll just, on that aspect, I'll definitely keep my feet on the ground.
Experimentals have a set of regulations and requirements that they have to follow, and safety guidelines. You know, hey, you're flying over the public. And before you can take one up, there's a whole gambit of inspections and regulations that you have to meet, even on the experimentals. And you know what? I believe, don't quote me on this, but I believe the emergency chutes are required on the experimentals.
Okay, good thing. It also probably helps the, you know, NTSB look at actually what happened to the aircraft instead of having to go through and pick up all the pieces spread out over a distance.
I used to know this fellow that was a retired one star in the Air Force, and they used to call that augering in, and he said he had seen some really bad ones. As a matter of fact, back in the late 60s, you know, they used to repair... Lockheed Martin used to repair or rebuild F-4 Phantoms down at Donelson Center. And my dad and I were headed south along about Williamston exit, or along about that area. And he and I watched a pilot eject and watched an F-4 Phantom go straight in. Down there on Saturday, it went in on a Thursday, and on Saturday we rode down there, and the military had come in on the site, and there was nothing that you could see because the aircraft, when it went in straight down, and they dig down about 3 or 4 feet and they get a little puff of steam of burning fuel, and they throw some dirt back in. Well, they'd wait a few minutes, let it kind of gas off, and make sure there wasn't going to be a flame. They'd start digging again, and when they finally got to the end of it, that aircraft was down like 30 feet down into the ground, down to the tail.
Crash. Past light, so I'll say 73s. It's been enjoyable riding along. This is W4VX. 73s, gentlemen.
Try to behave yourself out there today. Have a good work day. Oh, gosh, I said that four-letter word again. Have a good day, bud. So, Lloyd, what do you do?
River manager for Spartanburg County Government. I've been doing that like 19 years.
I remember that now. Yeah, you and I have spoke. Yeah, we spoke about the ID-TNT errors and the, what is it, picnic? Yeah, I think you told me about picnic.
About the picnic problem and the acronym FOCUS.
Okay, I'm bait. Go ahead, tell me about FOCUS.
Keep it clean, but it's F off because you're stupid.
I will definitely remember that. I hadn't heard that one. Oh, my goodness. I'll definitely remember that one. You just made my morning, bud, because I'm going down to work on a, digital imaging system this morning. So, and generally those have lots of ID-10T errors in them. And what did the picnic stand for? I forgot.
Problem is in the chair, not in the computer.
Right. Yep. Yep. Well, hey, you know, people that, you know, operators, they're just not, you know, they're surface operators. They don't go deep into it. So, you know, you got to expect that kind of stuff from time to time.
Yeah, I'm glad the first thing that the employees, the county employees are taught when they have a computer problem, the first thing to do before they even call IT or put in a SysAid ticket to reboot. If you have not rebooted, don't call yet.
Yep. Hey, listen, on Windows 10 and some of the new stuff, the new operating systems coming out, can you turn off the updates on Windows 10?
And just look up on the how to change the registry key from the value that it's currently set, or even you can go through the control panel and tell it to not look for Windows updates. But the best thing to do is you can do it that way and go into the registry key and change that value not to look for Windows updates.
Because I tell you something, here in the last year, I've been having lots of problems with some of their updates skewing my algorithms for my imaging.
It does mess it up. Like I said, there's many settings in that control panel for the Windows updates. You can tell it to manually set it to manual, or you can tell it to where the settings that you're going to do a search or go out and search, but then let you choose which updates you want to install.
Panel, through the control panel on Windows 10, it still gets some updates. I mean, you know, the background stuff, and those are the ones that's really causing me all the headaches.
Because there's called criticals and security updates, so there's a setting to get to tell it to do all Windows updates as you would receive Windows updates or something to that effect, where when it looks at all updates, it's going to allow you to manually review all those before installing.
don't want to give my end users the option to pick and choose. The more choices you give them on the system, the more headaches you're going to have.
Best thing to do there is definitely look into this, because you can set this individually on computers. You can actually go to the group policy manager by going and typing MMC and adding that function of the setting the Windows updates by group policy, and it's individually set per computer, or you can download that file, export it, and import it into the next computer. And in that control panel for that, under the group policy, you can tell it to, you can do a whole lot more Windows update settings, turning them off, and have a lot more control that way.
All right. These systems, since they're digital imaging, and I got a, do you have to comply with HIPAA regulations?
Due to the fact that a lot of the agencies use Social Security numbers and stuff, we definitely have to abide by HIPAA. And the coroner's office have medical files for autopsies and stuff like that, so the county definitely has to be HIPAA compliant.
Yeah, I didn't even think about medical through the coroner, so yeah, I can see that. All right, so yeah, there's, put it this way. When I set up a system, it's on the network, but I've got it set up through my techies where you cannot go over and make changes in that computer from the network.
Good. Since you mentioned things are on a network, you need to look up setting a Windows update server, and that way you can look and you can set all security updates, Windows updates, and all the information by group policy, and that Windows update server will control what computers get what updates, and you can definitely have a lot more control through that way.
Opens up another whole can of worms. Each of these medical offices have their own network administrators, and a lot of times I can go in and remote access and repair problems, but I don't give them access to that computer, and these network guys on that imaging system really get bent out of shape because of that. So I'm basically a standalone platform within a network.
It does cause a little bit of problems. And the smartest thing the county did probably 5 or 6 years ago, we removed all administrative rights for just a standard user of the computer. So, because prior to that, they were installing anything and everything, and same way with that during the Christmas time or holidays, they would do that, little nice fancy screensaver that had all the blinking Christmas lights or whatever seasonal lights, and could not tell them at any point in time that when their computer got infected, that screensaver had embedded links behind it, and they would just click on something in a certain area and it would explode that or expand that embedded script.
Well, and see, here's another issue. I basically lock that machine up, and when it goes on to the network, and I started doing that for the simple reason that some of these offices would have outside sourcing for their networking, and the outside sources would come in there and lock up the entire network with their passwords. So on many occasions, I'd go to remote in to do repair systems. I'd have to call them back and say, your network people locked it up. You've got to either give me a password to get into your system, or you're just out of luck.
that's why it's always very smart to go through on any system and set up a local administrative account on that computer besides the one called administrator, and that way you can never get locked out of that computer. We do it all the time.
Well, some of these outside independent guys, they'll lock up systems in such a way that, well, you have to call them before you can get in it, they don't give out the passwords to the clinic, so the clinic can't even get into it, and that guarantees that they get to stay in there as that provider.
That's horrible. And due to the fact that we have two training labs, at the end of the week on Fridays, that computer lab is actually an image. So that way, we just sit there, and on Friday, we have a standard script that will actually run and just reset that training lab back up to a, as they say, a God image. So that way, whatever a person does during that training on that Friday, when they come back in on that Monday, everything's set back up as it was with nothing changed.
Zero default.
Yes, it is. All programs that was originally on there in their unchanged state is back to the original. All the default printers that were there, nobody's user profiles are on there, and everything.
I wish I could get some of these guys to do that. But anyhow, after I learned how to lock everybody out, except for the clinic manager, I always give the clinic managers the passwords to get in them, so that if I'm not available, you know, they can get online tech support from the manufacturer. But nobody but that clinic administrator and me get into that computer. Not even the network guys.
We know that has saved you a lot of headache.
And it's not that the network guys are trying to create problems. It's just that sometimes when they change a structure or something of that nature, see, I distribute the images out through the clinic using my image capture system, and I distribute the images out through the clinic as an image server. That way the images are always contained in one local, and they're protected except for where we send them up for archiving purposes, off-site archiving, PACS. And that way there's not much of a way. HIPAA seems to like what, you know, that structure. So
pretty much what they have to do with the coroner files, there has to be an original and an uneditable state, and then they can have a another document of like a picture. That way there has to be two pictures of whatever, of a crime scene or whatever, so that way when they, you know, in a trial or whatever, they can look at the original, and then they can look at the one where the people, you know, shrink down the borders of just like a wall with nothing on it. They can just crop that picture down a little bit to where it's really not necessary and save on pixel space.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it still controls the original image so that nothing can be modified. Yeah, that's cool. It's similar in a medical imaging, in a medical image where we can crop down to the area of clinical interest, and that saves huge on trying to transmit images over VPNs and that type of thing.
Yeah, if you don't have a good bandwidth from your ISP on the outside world, that can definitely be a headache.
Image on some of this on some of these X-rays can be upwards of 30-40 meg, and I just security too. That's the major. But most all of the systems use a VPN to transfer images back and forth between radiologists and the physicians.
That's a good. You know, what remote software do y'all use to connect to the server or a PC?
You know, that's embedded, and I'm not sure which one they're using. I do know that we're using a high-level SQL Server within the system.
Most of the time, so we'll have control of that person's computer just to be able to see what they're doing. We use Dameware to remote into somebody's computer so we can pretty much mirror what the user is doing.
Oh, I see what you're talking about as far as the remote in capability. Yeah, most of the time I'm just using a secured GoToMeeting has a secured, I'm sure you're familiar with that. They do have a moderately secure in and out for that purpose. And for my remoting in, I'm just using the GoToMeeting or one of the others. And that's what my manufacturers are using. Yeah, it's not super secure on the remote. But then again, we do not transfer images or access the database in the SQL Server through the remote. The only thing that we can really look at from remote in is, you know, the code and the structure.
Before PXB, for ID, the biggest one that we ever upset vendors is about when we do not allow any software to be installed on any of the servers, especially our SQL servers, and that just upsets vendors greatly that they're going, but this has to run on here, and I want this to run on server because servers really don't do a lot of functions to where they're really taxed a lot, and they just want their software and their processes to have as much oomph as they can.
There again, you know, you
can calculate. All right, this is KO4 at PXB. I'm at my place of work, so I definitely got to say 73 until we talk again.
Point it, buddy. You take it easy, and I hope you don't run into any focus or picnic groups today. I hope your day goes well. So, anyhow, 73 is bud, and hopefully we won't have any more atmospherics today. KN4 VWA, I'm clear after your final.
Go for it, PXB. You also have a great day today, and please be careful.